Good morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. This morning, our topic for consideration is beginning of perfected man. This is the first part of a two-part series. The United Lodge of Theosophists is an association of students who voluntarily choose to contribute their time, their service, their effort to the cause of theosophy, which is to promulgate the principles of the philosophy of theosophy. The lodge is focused on that sole object in promulgating, teaching, and exemplifying the principles of theosophy, the result of which will be a truer realization of universal brotherhood, as we say. So the basis for union among theosophists is what? Simply a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. It's not an organization with bylaws or officers or rules to follow. There are no dues to pay, but rather simply an association in more of a family type of way, which has the purpose of keeping these theosophical ideas, ancient ideas, before the public. The Lodge regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And these meetings are free, open to the public, and we hold these meetings twice a week on a Sunday morning through the summer. The doors open at 10:30, the meeting begins at 11 and ends at 12 promptly. Also, on Wednesday evenings during the summer, we are currently studying the Bhagavad Gita. And Wednesday evenings, the doors actually open at 5:30. The reference library is available, open to the public from 5:30 to 7:30, and the meeting starts promptly at 7:45 and ends at 9 o'clock. There is a book table in the foyer where if you choose to purchase books for your own personal study at home, you're certainly welcome to. They're available to the public at the cost to the lodge. There's no profit made. There are no dues or fees associated with this. However, the lodge welcomes any contributions of time, service, or money that you feel so moved to offer. And if you do so, please speak with the student at the book table in the foyer after the meeting. So, today is, as we said, the first part of this idea, the beginning of perfect man. And we will have the part summarized, and then there'll be plenty of time for questions and discussion.
Well, in the part this morning, we are considering evolution, which is no small thing. And theosophy tells us it took hundreds of millions of years in the evolutionary cycle before it was time for man to arrive on the scene, which happened a little over 18 million years ago. So in considering how we evolve, our natural thought is that the highest or most intelligent teach and pass on to the newest or least experienced. This is where, however, mystery and questions arise in our grand evolution as to why it took so long for man to arrive on the scene, and if those who did were self-conscious. So theosophy tells us the more advanced egos, which are the eternal pilgrims, shall we say, the more advanced egos from the past Earth arrive first, followed by the less advanced, until all who are self-conscious begin to work in the very first stages of establishing the first evolutionary globe. The higher egos, after having established the globe, pass on to the second globe while the later stream is still entering the first. What was known before is passed on to be used in this new period of work. Even though we are self-conscious beings, we are only aware of that state of consciousness we are concentrated upon at any particular time. Those self-conscious beings who are guiding these beginning evolutionary streams are universally conscious, or perhaps an expression of universal mind. They are referred to as hosts or hierarchies, groups, not separate entities. In our work then, on the way to becoming perfected man, it is said we tend to become a god before the realization that there is no separateness, when we then become God. All during the evolution of the first three rounds, these higher beings, or dhyanis, helped to form and alter the various types of animal species and gradually then began to work on the form for the body of man. From the ocean of theosophy we hear in the part, this is the point where intelligent aid and interference from a mind or mass of minds is absolutely necessary. All beings must at some point become a man and pass through to higher expressions of being to then become part of the hierarchies of these sentient beings or perfected men. And men is used equally, it's just a term to express. None of these beings, these higher beings, have the duality of personality and individuality. We've been studying those this summer. They do not recognize themselves as apart from any other. The fact that spirit is endowed with intelligence refers to the fact that the stage of being a man is a necessity in the evolutionary chain. Spirit and mind are awakened or lit up in man who is a self-conscious chooser, which we know is something the lower kingdoms are not yet able to do in this evolutionary chain. So the point is made that self-consciousness, referred to in the highest beings on the first round of our globe, is different from what we now consider to be self-consciousness, owing to the separation we still have when thinking of ourselves relative to others. So it is said in the first round, the archetypal process, it's a wonderful phrase, the archetypal process is taking place. The archetype, the architects are at work. The forms which will be used in later rounds by the various kingdoms are imagined as outlined in universal mind. As said in the part today, the host of dhyanis establish on each of the seven globes of the chain the pattern for the entire evolutionary program by going through the complete progress, the complete process on the highest, most ethereal planes. In the second round, then, the process of evolution is left to the builders. These are the powers of nature, the kingdoms of elemental forces. The plan has been laid down. It is time for the builders. Only when the time has come for humans to take up form, and the form is ready, does the differentiation of the dhyanic, dhyan, chohanic host take place. So up to that time, they are working as a group, a single entity. When man comes on the scene, we become differentiated reflections of that. This is the origin of self-consciousness, reincarnating egos coming forward halfway through the entire evolutionary span. Now, all of the process is repeated in individual incarnations on our plane. Everything comes first in mind, and gradually the form takes shape as our imaginings take on form or vehicles for use. And the example given is the conception and development of the child, the fetus. The body begins to form at the moment of conception, and the pattern for the child's body could be said to be undergoing the archetypal process. The embryo is seen to pass through each kingdom during its development. Science has tracked this, the shape and the characteristics of all of the kingdoms are seen over that 9-month period of gestation. The real ego, the eternal pilgrim, is latent on this plane during the whole process up until about the age of 7, when it is said to incarnate in and assume direct responsibility for the baby who has grown to that point.
Well, a lot to roll over in our minds there. Your questions or contributions are welcome. Yes?
It appears that first we have to grasp the idea of unity in action. As we've seen, that's difficult because of our minds pretending to be personal, etc. But to think as one.
So the contribution has to do with thinking as one during the early formation of the race. The article deals with, well, where was I if I am immortal when the earth was being born? Was I watching it? Well, we were present. However, that we was an I, as in all of us, and the idea of being individualized or individualities, it's different really when the part or when any time we hear the word host in philosophy and religion, the host, that has to do with creation, and it's the idea of the unity of all, or that from which all is going to come. And so one example of that, for instance, you know, is it a plurality or is it a unity? If we think of the United States of America prior to the Civil War, when people referred to the United States, they would say, the United States are. Today, when we refer to it, we say the United States is. It's a unity. And so that might help us discern what's going on there. Excuse us. So, does that make sense? Okay. So then how does this come out? Yes, go ahead.
It appears as though this pattern of many bodies but one mind occurs in nature quite often. And it makes me think we know in our bodies that many lives are creating the body itself. Are we a part of something like that? Is there a dominant mind over us?
Okay, so the contribution is in nature. It seems like there is evidence that there is, you know, many individual bodies but one mind, because anything lower than the human being is not self-conscious, so they can't make decisions together whether to do something now or not. And a perfect example of this was we were in South Carolina on the lawn, and of someone's front yard, unbeknownst to us, crawling up our leg was a bunch of ants. Had no idea. And those ants simultaneously, boom, all of them bit at the same time, all of them. And, you know, we hardly think that they all agreed to bite at the same time, yet the fact is they did. So there was one controlling intelligence there. There was one controlling intelligence there. Now, is that the case among human beings? Is there a single controlling intelligence? On the one hand, certainly not, because who controls our mind outside of the individual? The real issue is the individual willing to turn over his personal desires to the betterment of all, you know? So that would be the first step. Am I living for me, or am I living to be able to serve others? Second step, however, is as we proceed this way, is there not a connection with other people so that one makes himself more open to the influence and willing to accept the guidance of a mind that's on a higher plane, and as a part of a family working toward an end? Just an idea. Now, there have been a couple of hands. Yes?
It's certainly true, as individuals, we think as individuals, we feel as individuals, we are self-conscious. But there is, and I believe that this universal consciousness that they talk about at the beginning of the cycle would correspond to what we call the universal subconscious that C.J. Jung talks about. That we are all interconnected, but we don't consciously know it. But there are all these interconnected things. I mean, I can't think of an example, but I remember Rupert Sheldrake talking about how everything is connected. It's just one big field, but it's all undercurrent. And I think that's our unity. That's our universal consciousness.
Thank you. So the contribution here has to do with Jung's idea of we call it as being the collective subconscious. And this collective subconscious, if we recall, when he spoke of it, he would talk about the collective subconscious of a nation. And often he would localize it. And theosophy would agree with that. People who think alike create an organism, if you will. And so the idea, though, is if our effort is to live in service to all, regardless of nation, of religion, of race, etc., etc., then we have to get to know ourselves better and recognize that when we're thinking along the lines of a particular nation, isn't it helpful to recognize that we're not saying don't think that way, but recognize that you are, so that we can be critical and conscious of these influences and decide which of them are positive and will help and which we should shun or ignore or avoid. Yes, in the back corner.
We were thinking about the idea of the perceiver in each one of us, and yet we all have that power to perceive, but on different levels. different, shall we say, degrees of procedure. But we all have processed the idea that even within ourselves, there is something else that says, wow, that was dumb what you did, or that was a great idea. There's something within us that sort of, like the middle of a scale, it can see the up and the down. Well, also within every mankind that there is, there are different degrees of perceiving, but we all have it.
Thank you. So the contribution is here, yes, we all human beings are perceivers independent of what's going on in the brain. But just how we perceive and how we control our perception or our brains, how we control our brains, is a function of whether we identify with the brain and its functions or identify with the immortal perceiver which is present. So one thing that helps is we were speaking with a younger girl in the family about metaphysics and using the powers of your mind. And the fact is, we use metaphysics, or we take it for granted. It's a fact. And one example of this is, if I said the words Diane, John, Sean, and Kevin, what is that? And she said, that's my family. And I said, and so it's one family. But it's four people. So is it four people or one? Well, she said, well, first it's my family. And I said, well, don't you see metaphysically, you see a unity in those four people. And we can expand that beyond and beyond as to see unity in the entire planet. It is a metaphysical idea. Okay, yes.
So taking it to those higher metaphysical levels, wouldn't the collective subconscious the expression of personality and individuality and the self-consciousness we talked about all be expressions of universal mind? That there is the over, can't say the overseer, but the oneness of mind, the unity of mind, expressed as universal, and then gradually in evolution, expressions of it, self-consciousness, subconsciousness, individuality, personality, etc.
So is that an expression? We would say it's an analogy to the idea of universal mind. However, just like an individual can consciously choose for ill or good, so too groups of people, without even knowing that they're doing it, can empower and play along with and foster subconsciously, bad things in the world. You know, so one of the checks that Theosophy tells us is helpful is if we look at ourselves, or we can look at an entire people, and what is their idea of God? Is God an individual sitting on a throne who makes decisions, who has feelings? Because if so, then their idea of God really can be manipulated. Whereas if God is viewed as simply the unknowable, rootless root of all of life, universally present, accessible to all, and even is within all, then that society or that family or that nation is not as likely to be influenced for the ill of mankind. Yes.
I'm more like, when you get aware of like self-consciousness, that awareness, does that drift off into self-world?
So could you say that again?
Does that drift off into self-will?
Does self-consciousness drift off into self-will?
When you separate from, like, where I'm thinking I'm separated from the rest of it, and it's all about me.
Oh.
I'm thinking I'm creating the whole
Okay.
Universe.
Well, certainly one could play into the others, but into the other. But when we talk about self-consciousness, certainly the human being is self-conscious, and in that sense, we you know, a human being and a dog knows there's food, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat it. But the human being knows that he knows he's hungry. The dog knows he's hungry and he eats. The human being knows that he knows he's hungry. So he has there's a self-conscious awareness of these processes, and then can decide, yeah, but it's not dinner time yet, so I'll wait another hour, or that food's not good for me, even though it looks great, I'm on a diet. So self-conscious in the sense of we have the ability to control our consciousness. Now, how does that play into self-will? Sure. To the extent that the individual makes choices for himself, that's all a matter of willpower. That's all a matter of the use of willpower, which is all a function of desires, either personal desires or desire to, as in aspirations to be of service to others. In the white shirt.
Well, what we have to do is look on the back page of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then very last. The real angle is late going to care. And then at the seventh year, which time is said to incarnate in, and the next few words seem to say it all. And assume direct responsibility for the hitherto more or less irresponsible baby. And your comment about the United States in the first part of the
thank you. Was there a hand in the brown? No, in the corner. Okay, in the blue and then the white. Yeah.
A lot of this seems to point back to the fundamentals principles. There's an idea that can be illustrated by groups going to a sporting event. They go to the sporting event, they find not only are they the audience at that sporting event, they're also the players. So they're viewing what's happening or what they're doing, but not only are they the audience and the players, they're also the stadium in which it takes place. It's all one. We move in one lockstep, we're all one. And even those who speak in terms of, well, everyone doesn't have the same thing, but one of the things that theosophy does is to chide us and to guide us along so that we do move into that area where we're not the small self. We become identified with the capital letter S self. But it's all one. We are the players, we are the audience, and we are the stadium.
So we are the players, the audience, and the stadium. And the comment also had to do with operating as the self, as the capital self, rather than with the small s. One thing that we learned regarding the realization of self, one of the definitions for realization is the simultaneous recognition and acceptance of the divinity of all. So when we realize a truer realization of the self, it's a simultaneous acceptance and recognition of the divinity of the self. And but it's not just that. You know, when we realize something that we've been working on, the true realization of something. Maybe we've held it in judgment, we don't like this situation. But then we realize how good it was when we what? Recognize and accept the divinity and its purpose. Thank you. Yes?
So can we think then or accept sort of a hierarchy of mind in the sense that even with your own body, that yes, your self-consciousness, you're conscious over your body, but that goes through stages of communication through your body that goes down to the cell level, and then the organ level takes care of that. We can't think of all of that hidden knowledge that goes into taking things out of blood and this and that. It does that for us. But within that universe, there's a mind there as well. And we self-consciously go through that process. And we are in control of that for the most part, but then you have things like cancer cells that come to the bodies.
Right, so the question is with regard to the hierarchy of mind, and certainly we're told that the human being is what? A microcosm of the macrocosm, and also that there are living within us lives which are in the process of everything is soul and spirit ever evolving under the rule of law, we are told, and that rule of law is inherent in the whole. So in that sense, we as a being are the host for all of those lives which are evolving within us. So too are the what are referred to as Dion Shohans, or in regular English, they are archangels, and they are, so to speak, the host of self-conscious mind. And there are hierarchies of mind of which we are a part. Now, that's not to suggest that we are, well, of course we are subject to all of universal law. However, as far as our self-conscious thinking, we have to be aware that we can choose to recognize the truth of that, and act selflessly in the name of the whole and be of greater service to the degree that we can, or we can choose not to. Nevertheless, we are told there are hierarchies, and one helpful analogy there is we hear of angels, choirs of angels, and when we hear the word choir of angels, people imagine angels singing. Well, the word choir also is defined simply as a category. So if we look at those angels as categories of angels, each category having a different purpose, it correlates exactly to hierarchies. Different hierarchies influence the universe in different ways, influence the form in different ways, and everything about us is in one way or another way connected with every hierarchy of Dion Shohans, just like everything within our body is connected to and affected by our mind, the way that we think. Yes?
And at the end of the part, as it says, around the age of 7, self-conscious responsibility is taken for the continuation of that stream of evolution. Now, as was described, the multi-layers of cells and organs and lives of all different kinds that make up our bodies almost run automatically. They have been trained and learned. Hunger was brought up. We may not actually be hungry at noon, but we have fed the vehicle at noon for so many days, the response comes hunger. We may not actually need it, but we've trained it. So the point being, once we do assume conscious responsibility for this lifetime, not only are we impressing and affecting all of the lives that make up this body, but everything around us, which becomes enormous when we think about it. From our thoughts to our feelings to our actions, we are sending out vibrations of feeling and thought that have their resultant effect, and we must take responsibility for that as well.
Thank you. Yes, in the blue shirt.
That analogy of the sports event, I think it's very apt, and it is really, you can spread it over different kinds of people getting together for some reason. We are getting together to talk about these things, and we are forming a group consciousness. All the other lodges who may be meeting at the same time add to that. All the other theosophists around the world, whether they're united or whatever, it's all one universe. And I think everybody must have had an experience where you lose yourself totally. In a group event, and I've been singing in choirs for most of my life, and I remember a couple of occasions where the experience was such that it was such a great performance that I wasn't aware of myself. I was only aware of being part of this wonderful experience. And I think people have that. You can have it at a sports event, you can have it at whatever. But it often happens in the group.
Thank you. Yes?
Well, we've heard the term karma, law, and then the reincarnating ego. How does explain those terms in context with the topic today, law and doctrine of reincarnation?
Right, so how does theosophy explain that? How does that fit into our discussion today? Well, we're told that the purpose for every great period of evolution is adding more to the number of perfected men in each great period. And in that sense, the evolution that proceeds is, well, let's start with the basics. You know, the source of all is undefinable and unknowable and really has no qualities, characteristics. The source that some refer to as God, which theosophy encourages to think of the word deity or divinity so as not to give it attributes. There is simply a source diffused throughout all of the universe. And the only thing we really can say about this is that it's analogous to space. Space exists, whether there's something occupying it or take that thing away from it, space still is. That's all we know. And that the universe, on a periodic basis, manifests or from within this source, or in other words, differentiates this source. Now, this differentiation, we're told, is a movement of spirit, will, and desire. That is the first movement, is will and desire. In the part, we look at the collective aggregate forms, the manifested verbum of the manifested logos. That logos is the highest of the hierarchies, the Dion Shohans. And there's this differentiation in seven methods that proceeds from that, according to not the decision of a God who says, I think I'll create the world in man, but rather according to law, which is the effect in this period of manifestation. It's the effect of everything that was in the previous great period of manifestation. It's all cause and effect on a universal scale. That idea of cause and effect is directly analogous to the experience in a world, the experience in a solar system, the experience to a human being. Karma affects or takes place on every plane. Well, the process, as is being said in this part, that goes on is under law, the planet comes forth according to the effects set up in previous manvantaras, but it's universal consciousness, it's under the laws that are set. And so we are there as part of universal consciousness. But we are told that evolution proceeds so that deity can experience itself. And to do so, there must be self-conscious individuals on the scene. That's all what evolution is about. Evolution is about first involution into matter, and then experiencing all of the experiences that can be experienced in any given manvantara, and evolving through it. Well, that host, that universal mind, differentiates itself, or rather individualizes itself, into rays, which is what and who each one of us truly is. So while we are individual, we're individual what? We're individual rays of universal mind, of the Dion Shohans. And we proceed from life to life, learning and experiencing by cause and effect, until we have learned all the things that this planet, that we can learn from this planet. Now, it can be said that that's the fall of man, and a lot of current religionists say that it's the fall of man, it's because he sinned. No, actually, the fall of man is all a process of the natural law of evolution. If there's a sin involved, it's that man has not continued. Once he reached a certain level of self-consciousness, he has the responsibility to continue evolution according to his own self-devised methods. If there's a sin in there, it's because he doesn't continue to move forward in ways according to his power. Was there a hand?
I don't have so much knowledge about all of this that I'd be happy to hear. It's not my first time here, but I always believed it. I don't know to explain why, but I always believed in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, some researchers in the area are saying that it might not happen, the reincarnation, but transmigration. And I don't know what is transmigration.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, there are a lot of words that are lumped together with the progress of the soul through form, and the word transmigration is theosophy would say it's a false doctrine. Transmigration of the form is the idea that a human soul, once in a human body, the next life can be back into an animal body. It's as transmigration put succinctly is a human mind after a life as a human being can be reborn in an animal body. That's what transmigration is. That's what the word means. Now, theosophy does not agree with that.
Okay.
And that's related to another word that you know, it helps. One more word would be metempsychosis, which is the progress of mind through form, universal mind, through all forms, from the elemental, through the mineral, through the vegetable. Intelligence informs everything.
But all of it is, it's after being a human?
No, that's the point. Metempsychosis speaks to the process of universal intelligence proceeding through the different kingdoms and informing the form. The form of whether a tree or a rock, there is intelligence there. And so the process of universal mind going through and evolving through these forms is mitemp psychosis. And the crown of that, or the finality of that, is once early in the formation of the earth, once this process of mitemp psychosis has brought the human form to the point where it's able to be the tabernacle or the host of an individualized ray of universal mind, then that's what we say actually is it has been perfected. That's the highest nature can get to without being aided by a self-conscious thinker. And so the form, sometimes the philosophy refers to the human being, no, sometimes the philosophy refers to the human form as being a perfected animal. A perfected animal in the sense that it's gotten there, now it can serve for its highest purpose, which is to be a tabernacle for a self-conscious thinker. Yes?
But for these people, they believe in transcendental migration.
There are those.
And then after the mind is in a human body, and then when I die, it's the end. It's the end. Because I'm coming from the, according to them, I'm coming from the mineral kingdom, vegetable kingdom, animal kingdom, and then after this human kingdom, and then when I die, I don't reincarnate. I it's the end for my mind. Is that
okay? Well, let's take a look at that. If the process of individual evolution is this continuing taking on of a higher and higher, more complex form, then obviously the mind is not the form. The mind vivifies the form. So the form doesn't matter. It's the mind which makes the form alive. So once the mind reaches the highest form, and that form dies, does it even make sense for a minute that, oh, because the form dies, now the mind is no longer, you know? There's a statement where the future of a soul which lives according to the universal law is the future of a thing whose splendor and brilliance springs eternal. Certainly, how could a simple temporary form bring an end to such a thing? Okay, in the blue?
On those same lines, in the study of the fundamentals, it says, as far as the purpose, it's all of life is always seeking perfection, but perfection can never be a place where you stop. In an infinite universe, there's always further perfection to make. So there wouldn't be an end. We wouldn't get to that point where, okay, that's it, that's the end of it. It's constantly going on. The bridge between animal and God is human. Once you cross that bridge, then you enter a whole new set of challenges elevating in that particular realm.
Thank you. As the part says, man becomes a God, capital G-O-D, and then once he recognizes truly the universe, the unity of all, becomes a God, but becomes God. Yes?
No. As an analogy, we know energy can never cease. It takes on different forms and is used differently. If we rub our feet on the carpet and touch something, there's usually a spark. So we've proven there's some electromagnetism within us that is this energy, form of energy that keeps us going. So when the physical form is laid down finally, end of a lifetime, that energy doesn't die. It goes somewhere and is used in different ways or takes up a new form. But if we are truly energy, spirit at our core, we can never end. We simply continue the journey in whatever the next appropriate form would be, moving forward.
Thank you for the contribution. Yes, sir.
What I'm getting out of today is it's a really important thought and what I believe. And if my belief is in alignment with the deity or the universal principle laws, if I can vibrate at that vibration length, I can actually experience some of the aspects of God to a certain extent. My cells can, and if I vibrate at that, I can stay healthier. You know, my cells have intelligence. It's just a matter of my linking with the link.
It's just a matter. Okay, so it's a matter of recognizing that there is a link.
There is a link.
And acting from a basis that's going to strengthen that link. What would be the basis from which to act to strengthen the link with the universal consciousness? What would be that basis?
Brotherhood.
Well, it would have to be along the lines of recognizing, okay, the unity of kind of vague, kind of abstract, but how about acting from a basis of everyone is my brother? And yes.
Well, that's a particular case, but that's the whole point. Who am I? What am I? And it links to the previous confusion about transmigration. And the example given is that the blood in our blood vessels, once it rises to a certain point, it doesn't go back. The valve shut behind it and must go forward. So, a good question to ask about when I die. Well, what was I before I was born? Where was I? Where did I come from? Therefore, we have two questions. Where did I come from yesterday? Where will I be? And that helped us research the question of my relationship to the whole.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Was there a hand in the blue here? There wasn't a hand earlier.
Oh, it's just a reference to your comment that isn't that what Southern revivals are all about?
Southern revival?
Baptist revivals.
What are they all about? We're not sure.
The Hallelujahs and they have these big convocations where they get all into a frenzy and sing Hallelujah and they get all worked up and they become a unity.
Never heard of anybody. Okay, yes. Okay, we weren't sure what aspect of it you were speaking of. And they're right. Well, there are those who operate more from an emotional basis, and those who are devout to higher principles live a higher. I'm sorry?
It works for them.
And it works for them. There are those who operate more from an intellectual basis. And there are different, depending on what our strengths and characteristics are as a human, we have to use what we have to get there. And yes, these hallelujahs, they're fun to be a part of. Come on. Wait, there was in the white, and then, you, yeah.
See, the earth is also our host.
Is all what?
Is also our host.
The earth is also our host.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So just as we are the physical host to certain parasites and certain other organisms with symbiotic relationships to us, so too is the earth a host to us, to which at different times in our evolution we are more of a parasite to the earth, depending on how we treat it.
That might bring into perspective.
Thank you.
That's
and then there's of course the idea, so if the earth physically is our host, so too there's the idea of the planetary spirit, which is the collective consciousness or the spiritual host of all of humanity. Not some guy who's like managing things, but rather is still a unity in the highest way, which is a collectivity of all human beings' consciousness on the earth, is what we would say is the planetary spirit, which is the source of where we came, the Dion Chohan. Yes, sir.
Little advertising on our behalf for the Wednesday night class, which concerns the Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Two of the things that were spoken on are addressed in that. One of them is early in the Gita, when Krishna says to Arjuna, "You and I both have lived many lives. The difference is I remember mine and you don't remember yours." That's the first part. The second part is we talk about all of these diverse ways in which we try to fulfill our duty to get to actually know who we are, what we are. And there's a part in there where Krishna says to Arjuna once again, "Even those who deny me will come by me. In their denial, I'm their denial. They still have, you know, they will still have to live with me. There's only one vision. We all use the same vision. It's just according to what eyes we see it through. So denying makes no difference. You still have to acknowledge in your denial. You wouldn't be able to not deny it unless it's there."
Thank you. Wouldn't be able to deny it. Well, when we look for the truth of a matter, there can be this huge diversity of opinions on how it's true, why it's true, is it more true in certain aspects, but really, there's only one truth, and whereas really depending on how you were raised or what nation you were raised in, there are different views on what is moral, you know. Which is not to say that one is right or one is wrong, but rather to accept that there are different people who have moral views on the same issue. And so the operative word there is compassion, not control, not change that other person to think the way I think, because really, we heard it explained once that there is a unit of measure. Call it the golden ruler, and that unit of measure is within every human being, and it's identical. So in any given situation, when we call upon our thought process to determine is something moral or not, and it comes out different from someone else's opinion, really, is what we see is the unit of measure that we're measuring this issue by different from the other person's? The answer is no. We both have the same unit of measure. What's different is the instrument that we use to perceive that unit. Just like sometimes you look in a mirror in a circus and you're short and fat, or another mirror will show you tall and thin. It's the imperfect organs of perception that we use to see this ruler. So the object is not to try to convince someone to change, but rather to work on ourselves and perfect ourselves so that we can better perceive what the truth is. And something tells us that the more we make that effort, the more we're going to be inclined to accept empathically and compassionately the differing opinions of others, because all that really means is perhaps that they're on the path that we've been on for how long, and we probably, you know, very often were in a lot worse shape than they were back in the day, so it's a matter of taking personal responsibility for our own units of perception. Yes?
Yes, on the first page, and that
Thank you. So then we'll finish that up with, right, so this evolution continues, and just as that paragraph that was mentioned says that we will reassume our primeval form, the Dionic Shohanic host, when we reassume that form, that doesn't mean that we'll be the same as we were before this and this was worthless. Rather, when we do, we'll be everything that we were prior, plus all of the wisdom and all of the experiences that all of humanity collected through the entire sweep of evolution will all then be at hand. Our meeting is adjourned.
Okay, turn it off.
Yeah.